Hi there, and welcome to the next DBN podcast episode. My name is Melanie, and today I'm joined by Peter Jackson. Now, Peter is a DBN member under his business name, which is Northeast Writer, but he's also a local author. Good morning, Peter.
Morning, Melanie.
How are you?
I'm good. And you?
I'm fine, thank you. Thursday morning, and we're forecast for snow, and I'm actually looking forward to it
really?
On the run up to Christmas. No. Peter, I've known you for quite a while now. I mean, I'm going back quite a few years, back in the days when I used to work for an accountancy practice and used to come in and have a bit chat and reception. That's going back quite a few years. Anyway, it's lovely to talk to you this morning about a couple of things. First thing is you're a DBN member. And the second thing is that you're just about to launch a historical fiction novel. And I've been lucky enough to have the advanced reader copy. And the book is called Legions of the Moon, and it's about two Roman frumentarii, is that how you pronounce it?
No, that's excellent, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. The frumentarii are like the secret service of the Roman Empire, and they've been sent to Britain, although at first they're not entirely sure what for, but they find themselves sort of in the middle of a plot and a counterplot. They are heading from London up to the northeast, where it's described as the northerners are barbarians. Peter, it's absolutely fascinating, and I'm only sort of on to chapter 5, but I find myself in coffee breaks and things like that, just sneaking a few more pages in. What inspired you to write this book?
Well, that's a question that I have to try and remember, because it dated over a few years. But I've always been interested in history. I read history at Oxford, and I've always liked reading. I love books, so I particularly liked historical fiction. I think from childhood, always wanted to be a writer, to be an author. The ideas slowly came together, and then when I moved to the northeast and to Lanchester, living a few hundred yards away from the fort, I suppose that's when it all came together. It's, well, you know, why not? They say write about what you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it was what I knew in terms of history and what I knew in terms of location. So I suppose that's what brought it together.
So you've mentioned Lanchester Fort, which in Roman speak it's called, is it Longavicium?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, I'm getting good at this.
Yes.
So how hard was it to do the research around, you know, what you needed for your book?
I think the answer to that is for me it's not hard to do research. As I said, I did history at University of Oxford, so you know, that's something I was trained to do. But you know, and anybody can go to a library and pick up a book and start making notes. I think the secret is knowing when to stop doing the research.
Mm-hmm.
You could go on forever researching. It's coming to that. You have to reach the point where you say, "Okay, I've got enough now. I'm going to have to start writing."
Mm-hmm.
I would say that's the real skill. Is not knowing how to start researching, it's knowing when to stop.
So when you did your research, was there anything that you found out that was particularly interesting, which was sort of related to the area that we live in the northeast?
Can't think of a specific thing. I mean, there's a local group, I think Friends of Longavicium.
Mm-hmm.
They've done a couple of publications which were around the village, which were extremely useful, gave me details of the fort and the surrounding area. Something I might add on that, I think a large part of the research as well wasn't just, as it were, the dry history books, but actually reading Roman writers of the period, the poets, people who wrote letters, just to get a feel of the way they thought.
Yeah, the way they communicated. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So this isn't your first time at DBN, is it? You've been a member of DBN for quite a lot of years, with the odd little break in between. Mm. So, you know, we used to go networking together. I think the last time I can remember seeing you and talking to you at a networking event, it was probably at Lanchester Garden Centre. Funny enough.
Yeah,
exactly. So what's your thoughts around DBN and the whole community, networking community?
Well, it's a great organisation, and it's particularly striking. I have to try and, like you, have some difficulty remembering how long ago things were. But I think when I joined a few years ago, it was quite... it was on the cusp. I think it had been, here's a good word, quite moribund.
Moribund, that's the word for today.
Yeah, and Gary sort of took it in hand, and his growth was exponential. I mean, it created a fantastic organisation with a great buzz about it.
Yeah, and of course you've got a business that you've been training under feet. Well, this is a business that I've known you for, is Northeast Writer, because your career up until now has always been journalism. Is that right?
More or less. I mean, my first job after university, I worked in the City of London in sort of accounting, banking, and broking. Didn't like that. So after a few years, returned north back to my native Lancashire and retrained as a journalist. And as a journalist, I moved to join the Journal in Newcastle, and we're living in Lanchester. So yeah, most of my career has been journalism, writing in one shape or form.
Have you got a niche, or is it very general?
Well, I specialise in business journalism. Mm-hmm. I spent some time as a features writer, general features. But yeah, business journalism was my speciality. Mm-hmm.
And you've been freelance for how many years?
Oh, gosh. I dabbled in PR for a while, so I left the Journal, I think it was about 2002, and so a few years of PR. I freelanced, I think, probably for about 10 years.
Mm-hmm. Well, Peter, obviously I want to get back to the book, because I'm absolutely engrossed in it at the moment. I just wondered if you could sort of give us a little bit of a reading from the book, and perhaps a section that's particularly interesting, or something that will get our listeners hooked and or intrigued to find out more.
Okay. There's one I prepared earlier.
This wasn't pre-arranged, was it, Peter?
No, by no means. Okay, well, you've set the scene pretty well, Melanie. The two main characters, the Frumentarii, go to Britain on a mission. They're not entirely clear what it is. And they're being sort of manipulated or directed by powerful forces in Rome. And they're operating in that kind of fog. There's a senior character, a politician or official in Britain, in London, called Horatius Butio, who's the sort of the accountant, the man in charge of the money in Britain. He's at the receiving end of some of these plots, and he's getting worried about it. So there's a short passage there, which I'll read, and that then leads into the next episode, where the various people are scheming in Rome. Horatius Butio, the provincial procurator, wrung his podgy hands, heart hammering. Lotus, the Bithian, an associate of Apocrus, was responsible. Lotus had arrived trembling in Butio's study minutes earlier, couldn't sit still but kept jumping to the window, checking the street. Oh, curse the fellow, weren't his nerves bad enough, and now this. He'd feared it would come to this. He'd been dreading it for weeks. Yes, weeks, since the atmosphere in the city had grown menacing. Whispers and rumours had intercepted glances that passed unspoken signals. Conversations were hurriedly cut short at his approach. There had been a sense of crisis building, and Priscus, who should have been a calming influence, had only made matters worse, voicing suspicions of plots, trusting nobody, and making oblique and not so oblique comments about Tiberius Flavius Fimbria and his influence. Merciful heavens, what had all this to do with him? He was a provincial procurator, an accountant. He was a private man, a stay-at-home man. He had no interest in intrigue, but only sought that his figures should tally. "Tell me what you heard," he squeaked. "Word's gone out," said Helotus over his shoulder, still peering through the window. "Word? What word?" "Pay blades. Generous payment promised. They say you're as good as dead, to be killed this very evening." Butio wept. Next passage is when the two main protagonists, the Frumentarii, Quintus and Manius, first reach London, or Londinium, as the Romans called it. Quintus and Manius reached Londinium on a day still cold enough for a cape close fastened and a scarf up to the chin. It didn't rain, and a weak sun occasionally peeped through a fleeting gap in the clouds. Late in the afternoon, as the light faded, they left their ponies and shouldered their bags at the Imperial Posting House by the gate, at the southern end of the long bridge over the Thamesis. They were waved through. some 200 paces before them was Londinium, its massive timber wharf stretching more than half a mile along the north bank, against which were crowded more than a score of ships moored for the winter, and behind them were ranks of warehouses. The whole city smoked and glowered over the broad river in the dusk, its lights shimmering on the oily black waters. As they passed over the bridge, jostled by many travellers, they could also make out on the far bank to the left a splendid palace of light stone, its terraced gardens running down to the Thamesis. A respectful distance from this palace, on three sides were tightly packed wooden buildings. Once over the bridge, Quintus approached the soldier, the beneficiarius, who was supervising the traffic, for the whereabouts of the provincial procurator's house. They went as directed, moving amid a greater crowd. Britons, Gauls, Greeks, even swarthy Africans and many Germans. It was a bewildering mix of dress, peasant-hooded cloaks of coarse blue broadcloth, turbans, skullcaps, barbarian trousers, plaid of many colours, and, good to see, a party of respectable if boisterous young citizens with cloaks clutched tight over togas, hurrying no doubt to some smart dinner party. All striding out as if eager to be indoors and warm before dark. Even the file of half a dozen slaves dragging their chains through the mud and filth moved smartly, needing no coaxing from their driver's lash. The air was damp and heavy with the stench of smoke and grease, and as the day died, a chill penetrated to the very bone. Indoors there was promise of relief and ease, and Quintus and Manius passed taverns whose open doors revealed the crackling glow of fires and the welcome moist smell of ale. Outside, the press of the crowd thrust them into the roadway, driven back by rumbling wagons, throwing up muddy water, and by the oaths and whip-crack of the draymen. The wooden buildings were tightly packed, squeezing each other out and over the street, and signs boasted their wares, wine, meat, fish, leather, oil, bread, quackery and whores. Manius noticed, cramped between a cobbler's and a potter's, a small temple to Cybele and her vile castration cult. He shuddered.
You know, it's that I'm like I say, I'm up to about chapter 5, and so that's just very familiar for me what you've just written out. And obviously, I'm not going to mention anything about it, but it does get really exciting. Our heroes, I'm assuming, are heroes, Manius and Quintus are just heading north now, so I'm intrigued to see what happens. And so your book, tell us this, how you got it published. Or is it just a matter of you rang someone and sent them a copy of the book, or?
If only.
I suspect there was many doors to be knocked on, was there?
There were many doors to be knocked. I mean, getting a book published is incredibly difficult. If you have a choice between saying, I will get a book published or I'll win the lottery, you might as well, you can go down either route with the problem about it. She's exaggerating slightly, but it's a long, long, hard process. I mean, these days, publishers don't take submissions directly. You have to go through an agent. And getting an agent is very hard to get them interested. Mm-hmm. It's a long, wearisome job of sending a manuscript off to agents, hearing nothing or saying, yeah, well, thank you, but no thanks. But to cut a long story short, I eventually heard about an independent publisher called Right Side Left, who encouraged new writing, and sent it to them, and they loved it and said, yeah, please. In fact, they want a trilogy, so I'm now hard at work researching the next one.
Wow. So there's going to be sort of another couple of books. I'll be interested to see how the story pans out. And so if any of the listeners today listening to this podcast is interested in writing a book, have you got any advice for them?
Yes, and it's advice, it's not original. I read once, and I'll sort of paraphrase, but whoever it was said this, sort of described the whole world of literature as being like a great lake, and that's fed by, you know, mighty rivers such as Dickens and Shakespeare and Tolstoy, or little streams of, you know, sort of some Mills and Boone author or whatever. And this person's advice was, before you even think about pouring your little bit into this lake, you have to get in there and drink deeply of it. Mm-hmm. That actually meant read. Mm-hmm. Don't think you can write a book before you've read lots of books.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't, nobody would dream of sort of going out and buying a piano and thinking, right, I'm going to compose a symphony. It's not that straightforward. so that's first bit of advice. Second bit of advice is, yes, go for it.
Yeah.
Don't put it off once you've done that reading and done that background and done your research.
I'm just thinking now, the book isn't out yet.
January the 31st. Is
yeah. And I know that Gary's been talking about getting you along to do a reading and one of the DBN networking events. So hopefully it will be before the launch of the book. If anyone wants to follow you, you're on Facebook, aren't you? So your Facebook page is Legions of the Moon.
Yeah.
And you're also on Instagram as well. And I've noticed that a few sort of local history groups have started following you as well and taking interest in your work. So we're trying to draw up, obviously, some interest. Victory is, it's not all in and around the Northeast, but a lot of it is always inspired by, I guess, the fort at Lanchester and Ebchester.
More than half the book is in and around. Derwent side is
which is absolutely fantastic. Hopefully it'll put us on the map. So Peter, it's been lovely talking to you. I really, as far as I've got the book, I'm really enjoying it, and I'm not typical historical fiction reader. I'm a very lovey-dovey person, but however, for those listeners out there, it has been described, I think, was this by your publisher or somebody else who reviewed the book, as a cross between Gladiator meets Game of Thrones. So I am a little bit intrigued that it's going to sort of get really interesting further I sort of delve into the book. So I'll let you know how that.
Well, one idea I had in mind when I wrote it was I wanted it to be a ripping yarn, basically.
From what I've read so far, it's got me hooked, and I'm looking forward to finding out how the story unfolds and how it ends. And it'd be interesting, now that you've planted the seed that there'll be a trilogy, to see how the, well, assuming the characters are in the next book, but how it sort of follows on. So yeah, it's really, really good. But thank you very much for your time, Peter. And hopefully I'll see you at the next DBN event. Definitely. Which is on the 15th. Okay, I'll speak to you soon. Bye.
Okay, bye.